Halton here. At MSA, our health and safety drives them to develop advanced safety equipment with performance and protection in perfect balance, like Globe Athletics, the latest innovation in turnout gear. Developed as athletic gear for firefighters, Athletics uses unique stretch fabrics that provide body contoured fit for unprecedented range of motion and flexibility. It's lighter weight, less bulky, and provides the protection you need from your turnout gear. Get the full story at msafire.com/globe.
Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to Fire Engineering's Hump Day Hangout with International Association of Fire Service Instructors. I always have a problem with that one. And a group from Traditions Training. And once again, we always like to thank Bobby Halton and the Clarion Events Group for allowing us to do this. And we're going to try to get started on the show today. Unfortunately, Chief Halton won't be able to be with us today. We certainly wanted him to be. Try to get an update on FDIC. You know, it's we're getting closer. We're about 4 or 5 months away now, and people are better start brushing up their programs. That's meant for Sammy Hiddle and Scott Kraut. You know, we need to pare down those hour and 45 minute classes to less than 900 slides and, you know, work from there. So, but we're really excited about that, being able to chance to go back out to Indianapolis and see all our friends and get ready to teach the fire service a lot. A lot of great instructors out there. I got, you know, from last year's catalog, I already have mine marked for the classes that I wanted to attend and learn from a lot of people. So we're pretty excited about that coming up here shortly. And, you know, be sure to get signed in. I know Scott Kraut from Fairfax has a class that usually fills up pretty quickly as a hands-on class. And, you know, pretty much the rest of us have, you know, a lot of classroom stuff. So unfortunately, Dan and Doug couldn't be with us today. And Larry's an EMT refresher. So that's always good for Larry to be able to sort of get some EMT EMS training under his belt. So I told him we could have got him continuing education credit with Shaw from Florida on here. You know, we'd probably get him a couple credits on there, and he could have stayed on the show. So, but hey, we're gonna go around here, and I'll want to introduce everybody, and then we'll get started with the topic. So we have Chief Shaw from Florida there, and if you are looking at it in our upper left hand corner. Scott Kraut from Fairfax County, a member of Traditions Training. Roger Steger from the Baltimore City Fire Department and a instructor for Traditions Training. And the Sammy Hiddle from the Wichita Fire Department and Traditions Training also. So it's going to be a good show today. Sammy came up with a pretty good topic for today's show. Something that I think about a lot, but I guess I hadn't really thought to talk about. But it's no fire is perfect. So when we talk about that, and that was always one of my problems when I was the operations chief, was that I would go to a fire and we'd really have a good, you know, a good stop, a good rescue. You know, the companies, you know, really did a good job on this particular incident. And then I would swoop in and find the things that we did not do well. And like I said, the companies could have done a phenomenal job, you know, making that push, you know, getting the roof cut open, you know, making a grab, doing the searches, but I always tried to find what we had kind of not done perfect. You know, and is the famous Vince Lombardi quote, you know, as Sammy quoted the other day, was that, you know, and one of his quotes was, we're always going to chase perfection and we may never achieve it, but along the way, we're going to get excellence. And that's what I want for. I want our fire grounds to be excellent. I'd love for them to be perfect, even though that's not possible. But so what Sammy was trying to get everybody to think about was when we talk to company officers, when we talk to training officers, is that what are we going to train on today? You know, what's going to be our topic in the firehouse? What's going to, you know, whatever shift you work. And then there should be no lack, you know, oh, what could we possibly train on today? I'm out of thoughts for what we're going to train on. Is that all we got to do is go back to our last fire, you know, working fire. Or matter of fact, it could be a food on the stove. Or, you know, or a small little fire. And we just got to make sure that did we do all the things right? And what we didn't do right, hey, let's drill on them. Is it a hands-on thing where we need to pull attack lines, you know, throw ground ladders? Or is it a process where we need to understand the general order better? And so those are all these kind of things that we can be talking about and drilling about each and every day. So, Sammy, I'm going to let you lead it off, and then I'll go around like Hollywood Squares and get everybody else's, and I'll start taking some notes for my follow-up. So I know you always have a different perspective than I do. So,
I always start off with the white cover for fire engineering. A long time ago, Bill Manning, he got tired of people criticizing the cover of fire engineering, saying the waste belt wasn't done, the truck wasn't parked, and he got frustrated and put out a fire engineering cover that was completely blank. And he said, "There you go, there's your perfect fire." And what he was trying to say was, yeah, we exactly what you were just saying, we can do a great job. But at the end of the day, there are things that we need to work on. And if we're truly self-evaluating with honesty, we can look at some of those things or little misunderstandings, whether it be communications or lack of building construction or deficiency in tactics that we can train on the next day and try to improve ourselves. You know, Shaw isn't on the program, but at dinner the other night, he was talking about during their hot washes, they go around and everyone has to talk about some of the positives that happened, but they also have to identify something that was not up to par. That might seem a little remedial, but I actually think that there's some value there, that you are looking at both sides of it.
You're done? You're done for now? I'm just trying to get all these Zoom hand signals down for you, Sammy Hiddle, so. Gotcha. Say, look, we'll pop up, you know, because I know that's just your initial thought, because I know you had some other stuff you wanted to cover, and we'll step up there to Chief Shaw from Florida and let him put his two cents in here about this and keep moving.
So when I saw the topic, and you know, no fire is perfect, when I heard that phrase, that to me is the definition of a blessing. You know, when everything that you learn from every fire we go to, whether it's we're going to hose work, forcible entry, ventilation. You can go on all day about the little nicks and knacks that we can perfect. I love what you brought up about the white cover. That's a phenomenal way to start this. It's such a great intro to this. Being in training for so long before I came over to this realm, I made it a point for my crews to always respond to incidents. We're always responding to incidents. I don't want to be part of the incident command structure, but to pick up on those things that we can learn from. You know, was this an incident that we can use as a training for future quarterly drills or hands-on training evolutions or whatnot. But there was so much we could take from all these things. So just a couple of things that I brought to mind from recent events that we had gone through several years ago, for example. And our crews are very vocal with us in the training period. They're always coming to us saying, hey, we saw this, we had this, you may want to look into this. Whether, hey, our blades are not up to par, our hose line needs, you know, we need training on hose line, whatever it is. So several years ago, we had an increase in HUD windows, you know, those HUD windows that are on some of the structures that are about to go down. Well, we had them in our neck of the woods, but they were polycarbonate in nature. So the crews emailed me, like, I think it was middle of the night or first thing in the morning, they're saying, hey, we need new saw blades. I'm like, well, what's up? And they would send us pictures of these HUD windows and the challenges they had on them. So this was a perfect opportunity. Right after that, we got with the company that was making these HUD windows. We got together with them. They donated like 100 of them for us. They actually had a building that they're all lined up around, ready to be put on and put on halfway, that we were able to train on and develop videos and whatever. And I think actually one of my chiefs actually put this on fire engineering several years ago. But the opportunity came from an incident. It was the most beautiful transition from, hey, we have challenges. Help us out figuring out a way to knock these out. And not only did it lead to improvement of strategies and tactics, but as far as R&D, we got the opportunity, the intro to testing out a bunch of new blades between different rotary saw blades and hacksaw blades and sawzall blades and so on and so forth. So it was exponential, the learning that came from it. I also think that you have to have the culture to support that. We were talking, I think it was either last Hump Day Hangout or the one before when I was on, I had mentioned that we do PIAs here, the post-incident analysis. And when we were interviewing the assistant chief for the shift, in his response and his overview of the incident, it was a third alarm fire. By him being able to say, this worked well, but you know what? I could have done this. And you know what? Maybe I should have parked here. Oh, in retrospect, I should have did this. The ability to say that gave permission to everybody under his command to do exactly the same. So the culture was set from here. Hey, you know what? I did this well, I did that well, but I should have did this. And you know what? I'd like to train on this because I could have done that better. So it set the standard culture-wise. So in terms of the topic for today, I think that it's just massive amounts of opportunity, massive amounts of not only from the training, but from other things like the research and development and so on and so forth. But you're right. As long as you have the right culture that accepts the fact that nothing's going to be perfect and there's learning opportunities through that, that just sets the bar and it just grows exponentially. So I'm glad we talked about this. This is a good subject today.
All right. Thank you, Chief Shaw. Scott Kraut, I've been on a lot of screwed up fires with you. So, let's.
Hopefully they weren't my fault. I was writing some stuff down as Chief Shaw brought up the R&D, which I think we can't finish this podcast without talking about, because I think to Sammy's point, we're always looking at the fire ground, but some of that stuff is beyond our control. And do we have the ability to do anything about it? Is it the thermal imagers aren't up to snuff, or we bought the wrong SCBA or what? And I think all too often we get wrapped around, especially the company level. Well, it's what we got. We got to deal with it. Whereas, we can certainly get back to the higher ups and say, this is a real problem. We'll get to that. But I think I look at it what I try to do as a company officer is look at it on a national level. Read fire engineering. Obviously, read the NIOSH reports. What's going on a national level? And then I compare that to the organization. And, as Chief Shaw mentioned, I think we all probably have some sort of post-incident analysis or significant incident report or after-action report. But do we do anything about it? First off, when we conduct these investigations, are they honest? Are we truly getting down to the crux of what happened? And, we're currently going through a We've had years and years of close calls, if you will. And at some point you have to look at those and say, okay, what did we identify were the issues? And of those issues, what have we as an organization fixed? I think all of us we have a lot of control over the goings on at the company level and in our house. But I think the training divisions are really where, where the rubber meets the road. I mean, that's truly the way this should all fall down is as Chief Shaw said, either from the bottom up or from the top down, which we all know doesn't always work out, but the issues are at the company level. And then when they make it back to the training division, or the training division looks at a national level and says, all right, what's going on in the fire service? All right, these are our hot topics, and then that needs to filter down. But I think, once we identify the issues, this is when we talk about this a lot with training, is who's going to step up, who's going to be held accountable to say, this is the issue. All right, let's face it. We screwed up, and here's how we're going to fix it. And to fix it, I think all too often we look at products, we look at technology, when we're not looking at the human element. And we all know that what we're facing. We're facing an unforgiving, unknowing, more importantly, event. We don't know what's coming around the corner. What are the conditions of your crew members? What is your condition? And that goes into, physical, mental. The perfect fire can't exist because we're all coming from a different point. And I might have slept 2 hours. You might have slept 8. The environment, it could be cold, it could be extremely hot. To find the perfect fire, you could write it out, a perfect spring day, the wind's at your back, the ventilation openings on the other side of the building, et cetera, et cetera. Everybody's out of the structure. But as we all know, that doesn't happen. So I think you have to break down those points. Was the layout okay? Positioning. And like you said, we can drill on that stuff all day. You can take one small fire and, drill it down into the finite things that have happened and probably get 5 or 6 drills out of even a good fire. Was the positioning perfect? No, not ever. It could always be better. Did you stretch the right line? Did you stretch the right length? Did you stretch dry? And I think all those things, whether they're right, wrong, or indifferent, you can say, well, what if we had stretched dry? We had a little, little kitchen fire the other day. And I was on the line because I got we call them orange helmets, but a guy riding up front who's getting ready to be promoted. And, I haven't run a line in a long time. So, happened to be fire was on my side. We pulled past, left room for the truck, had smoke in the terrace level of the garden department. And, I come off with a shoulder load the best I can at almost 50. And The lady, my the officer riding up does the right thing. He's attempting to take a lap. And during the course of his lap, he made a radio transmission that he wanted to revert the line to side Charlie. And I was in a tactical role at that point, and human nature took over, and I did not hear the radio transmission. At the same time, the lady at the stoop is telling me she thinks her husband may still be inside. So after I, you know, had her and her 15 kids get off the stoop, I made a choice with the guy with me. I said, well, you know, I can't leave the orange helmet wandering around out front. I'm not ignoring orders, so I didn't hear anything. Anyway, long story short, we stretched in, no harm, no foul, small kitchen fire. The guy had gone out the slider on the Charlie side. But the key was, after that fire, you know, we obviously have to talk about this stuff. And the guy riding up front was like, you know, how'd it go? I said, no, I mean, you made probably the right call. We go to Charlie, we keep the stairwell clear. But I didn't, you know, you have to realize that plan has to take effect prior to that maxi break, because there's smoke in the hallway. The lady's telling me her husband might be in there. I'm doing what any backstep firefighter would do. You need to set the tone as the officer and say, I want you to stretch dry to the landing. I'm going to do a quick lap and you know, be ready to reposition. Something like that, just coming out the gate would have slowed me down and made me think, stop, and wait and listen. So just little things like that. And like I said, that was a nothing fire. It was nothing went wrong. Everything went really well, actually. But just picking things apart, I think, is key.
Roger, you definitely go to enough fires at your job, you know, and I listen to a lot of those. I mean, do they all go right all the time?
Absolutely not. You knew the answer to that one.
I know, but that's my job, you know, to help you with your answer. You know.
No, of course, not everything goes right. So oftentimes just trying to mitigate and minimalize the calamity of errors or the level of the error and maximize the recovery time. So something as simple as if showing up and somebody's going, oh no, it's in this vacant, and it's actually the next vacant or whatever the case may be, trying to combat complacency amongst several of the crews just because of whatever excuses they want to come up with, and overcoming the humility aspect. A lot of people, obviously, type A personalities, aggressive mindset, they don't want to be able to detach and think about things that could have been better or different than how we've always done it. So, but there's new upcoming officers and older officers promoting into higher spots now that are really pushing and driving some change culturally and just department-wide. People are actually getting into some good spots to be able to affect that change too.
All right, Sammy, you got something to add? You said you got something to add there?
Yeah, listening to Kraut, I think one of the things that we can do is not only identify what we've done wrong, but we can apply this concept to both what we did wrong and we did correctly. But take time to walk through that fire again with our junior members, or sometimes that might be us walking as our company officers, walking through with our battalion chiefs and looking at the rationale behind it and actually taking time to explain why we do certain things the way we do. Sometimes, and I notice this with a rookie, but sometimes we train on something so many times that we fail to train on the concept. And what I mean by that is we had a rookie come out and he was in top of his class. But when we took him out to do water supply, and when you added trees and cars and he had to actually go down alleys, things like that, he wasn't able to do it because what had happened was he had trained to become proficient with the two plugs that we have at the training grounds. And so we had to actually go in and start explaining why he was doing some of the things he was at the training grounds so that it could be applicable to the street. Does that make sense at all?
Sammy, you always make sense.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on up here. It makes sense in my head, but
Sammy, I think you and I both talk about this, you know, all the time. It's very much applicable because, you know, especially, and you know, I don't want to get on the bandwagon of millennials or generation stuff, but I think even myself at this point, we want to know why. you know, why am I doing this? Why is that a better tactic? You know, that little fire I just described, it taught me a lot just because, like I said, I haven't run the line in a long time and I hadn't been on that side of the fence. And so, you know, by teaching the member up front who's getting ready to be promoted, I learned a lot as well about something that I might do, you know, a tactic or a play in the playbook that I might employ next go around when it's a terrace level garden apartment fire, you know? So I think you're absolutely right.
Some things that I found have helped tremendously is there's no shortage of videos out there now. We happen to have a lot of citizens taking videos of us in Baltimore that we can go back and review. Some even are like firsthand accounts, almost like they were on somebody's person. But that has helped me figure out little things that after the fact, like Scott and Sam talked about in the past, and Scott's big on task saturation and everything, and stress inoculation is in the heat of it, the minute of it, you may not know like why that line got caught up or how that got twisted. But going back and being able to review it, and it's like, oh, that's just a small movement that you didn't even realize you were making or whatnot, will lead you to be able to correct it and then hopefully change and make it better and to be accountable to each other.
I think one of the things when we talk about correction of tactical efficiency, that's something that we have to accept is going to take a lot of time. Learning is one thing, and if you look at some of the Stanford studies, but relearning is far more difficult because not only do we have to expunge the current knowledge that we believe to be right, but then we have to develop muscle memories, which are not instinctive to us immediately. And I'll give the example. I changed the way that I held my lid when I was putting on my mask. And it took me 3 months of every day coming into the firehouse and practicing it before I actually started to do it on the fire ground. And even then, I would still find times where I would revert back to my old ways of doing things. It's a very, very strong mental problem that we have to overcome when we talk about relearning. So going back to that why, when we can understand the logic behind it, that's going to help us apply it.
Scott Shaw, did you want to add anything before I got a couple questions from that I want answered by this group. So I was going to give you a chance to chime in first before I ask this question.
No, go ahead, Chief. Absolutely.
So, you know, I've got a captain of a rescue. Scott, you're a captain this week, right? Kraut?
It's early in the week, Ricky, so far.
and you know, Roger's been in that supervisory role. Chief Shaw's in a supervisory role. So, I mean, when Scott was talking about, you know, his particular organization, which obviously is always going to be, you know, in my heart, that particular fire department, and he talks about, you know, we may have these tailboard critiques, we may have these after-action reports or stuff like that, but there's some of the stuff that I wrote down that I'm finding hard to even address today is that, you know, I think people are afraid to point out people's issues because they're afraid how sensitive they're going to be. They're worried about friendships rather than the fire ground. Conversations with people that aren't like us. And I mean, when I say not like us, I mean that, you know, you don't have to be me, Kraut, you know, Chief Shaw, and ate up with this thing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You know, you don't have to be like that. When you're at work, yeah, I want your 24 hours of dedication to the community, to the department, to your fellow crew members. But I mean, if you have a person that is not into the job, but is there, you know, and what about it to somebody on the shift that we don't even like? I mean, let's be real about it. I mean, there's people that in the fire department that we don't like. You can't be in a big fire department. You can't even be in a small fire department and not like somebody. And so, and then how to have those conversations, because all we're, you know, what I think these three questions, and I know I'm speaking long, it's going to take you guys a little while to answer them individually, is that, you know, I go back to that. I don't think departments pay enough attention to error creep, where we keep making these errors and we keep allowing it to happen. And nobody you know, says anything. Now, look, I've watched videos where Sammy talks to people in a very stern way, you know, so they get the point that they're doing something wrong. So, but I mean, that, I think that's rare today. That, you know, I mean, I can remember getting yelled at for hours on end sometimes as a young firefighter, but if we allow these errors to keep happening, what's going to happen is what Scott Kraut was talking about, is that we're just going to keep making the same mistake. And sooner or later, it's going to cost us on the fire ground, going to cost us in an injury, or cost us in a line of duty death. So Chief Shaw, I'm going to let you go with that one, and I'm going to go back around the circle again. But I mean, do you understand what I'm trying to get at? I mean, I think we're really having a hard time with tough conversations lately.
So that's the line I wrote down, tough conversation.
Okay, sorry.
There, right there. That, so my first thought is, you mentioned a bunch of things, you know, friend versus leadership, the air proofing, these tough conversations. And you're right. And if it's happening in my world down here, it's got to be happening in your worlds up there and around the country and around the world probably. People, and I don't want to generalize, but I know that, you know, I've been reading some studies as well. And a lot of times supervisors, managers, leaders have a tough time having those tough conversations. My first thought is, can we really afford not to have them? And I actually like to have tough conversations. I think they're an opportunity to engage, to get to know the person better, to find out what the root cause is, and so on and so forth. But, you know, when I first started as an officer, I, you know, was like a lot of people, I had trouble finding the way to start that conversation. And after a while, I'm like, listen, we can't afford to not have these tough conversations. If there's something that needs to be discussed, no one else is going to do it unless you do it. You know, there's that video that Mark von Oppen shows, the guy that's on the elevator and the escalator stops and, you know, nobody's coming. We have to have those conversations. We have to make sure people understand that, you know, for me, for example, after a while, the crews that I was working with knew that I was going to have those tough conversations with people. It just became the norm. I wasn't going to shy away from them. But can we really afford not to have those conversations? If it's a deficiency on the tactical side, from the training side, whatever, and is it a crime of omission if we don't? In other words, are we committing a crime of omission by ignoring something and not having that discussion? Yeah, they're tough. That's why we took on the gigs we do, whether it's teaching, and it's regardless of rank. It's leadership in the fire service. Leadership in the fire service demands that you have these tough conversations when needed. You can't skirt them. You can't avoid them. You have to take the bull by the horns and have the conversation. However that happens, it has to be done. Now, granted, when rank comes into play, there's a different flavor there. And, you know, maybe rank gives you the opportunity to do it. But even then, regardless, the conversation has to be had. So I'm putting together a presentation, and one of the slides I got in there is it's two different little video clips. It has one video clip of some people locally doing forcible entry. The one guy doing forcible entry does it picture perfect, just gorgeous. I mean, just when you look at it, you're like, oh my God, it's so awesome. The next video has two guys taking 3 minutes to force a simple door. And the conversation that comes after that is this, you know, worthy of a conversation? Is it an opportunity? But does a conversation need to be had? In other words, can you look at that and go, "Nah, that's okay"? No, 100% no. It at least warrants a nice conversation. Hey, what was going on there? I saw that you had some trouble with that door. When's the last time you forced a door? Oh, maybe you need some training. You know, I got a forcible entry pup. Let's bring it over to the station and we'll all train. It's an opportunity there. So I'm sorry to drift on that, but I'll leave it at that. But I guess I get a little amped up when the concept of tough conversations comes up, because it shouldn't be that we're even considering not having them. We should be considering how to have them, instead of, well, maybe I should or shouldn't. I'm sorry, but I'm drifting there and going off on a decision, but they need to be had more often, and it shouldn't be an option, to be quite honest.
So, Chief Shaw, if you have an issue with forcible entry, Sammy has 1,276 slides that you can do in about 15 minutes, and he'll be able to get them to you. So,
Is it big enough to send through the email, or is it too big?
Oh, my God, no.
That was last week's numbers. He's up to at least 1,300 now.
So good that people are using the slides for other things. So Scott, I was gonna come to you. I sent you all a text of who I was gonna come to. So, you know, I think, you know, when did we work together? Almost 15 years ago. I mean, I think we were able to, probably more than that, we were able to have these frank conversations because one, we were a tight-knit group. And we did things on the job, off the job, all together. We were one big family. And I don't think you know, not selling short what firehouses are today, because, you know, I'm not in them as often as I used to be. But I certainly see, you know, the cubicle life in firehouses, you know, not a central location in the kitchen like it used to be. So we were able to have those frank conversations, and nobody would get butthurt over those conversations we had, that you, me, and everybody at the shift had. But I mean, obviously now you're living in a new world, and you're dealing with this new group of firefighters, and that's not a bad thing. So that's why I want to kind of lay it to you next. So,
frank conversations, is that what we called this? I distinctly remember one of them about 5 o'clock in the morning.
I've never yelled in my entire life. So
yes, you did. I was better for it, though.
I justify that, too, Scott.
I know, and God, man, this is a tough topic because, you know, we're dealing with a society, for God's sakes. But I think you just hit the nail on the head, Ricky. I mean, if you create a culture, and it's easy for me and probably Sam and Roger, a little more difficult for Chief Shaw because he's, you know, he's got a bigger group. And that's why I try to break things down from the organizational to the battalion to the, you know, the station to, you know, the engine, the truck. I think you have to build a culture where it's okay. And sometimes that takes calling yourself out, which I do routinely, because they have to know that the crew has to know that it's a, you know, it's the trust tree. It's safe. You know, you are a family, and part of being that family is that we will be the best company on the fire ground. And I think, you know, I think when you try to sell the product that way is that, look, you know, and you're not going to catch everybody. You're right, Ricky. There's always going to be one or, you know, the person that's not on the job for the same reasons that we all are. But that you can work with that too. All I need is for 24 hours is for my guys and girls to want to be part of the best company in the battalion. And then we can go from there. If we can get out of the battalion and be the best company on the second alarm, even better. But I think that's, and all that, all those little pieces, you know, Josh said that in one of his three bullet points at the end of his article. Was one of the reasons that that company operated so well was because they knew the wives and children, and they did hang out off duty and all that stuff. And so that's key. I mean, that is, you know, there's a time when your shift needs to be together, bowling or whatever it is. And then there's a time when, you know, you need to have your shift and your shift spouses or partners so that they can see what this life is like. And when you do that, you create a culture of, you know, just like with your kids or your dog or anything else, where, you know, when you do something stupid, I'm going to tell you. And now obviously if it's mission critical and it has to be addressed right then and there, then yeah, that, as Chief Shaw alluded to, you know, that rank structure, you have to say something. But there's never a fire or an incident even that goes by where I'm not looking to my chief for, you know, hey, what could I have done better? Or should I have done this? You know, in that instance where, you know, she says that her husband's potentially still in the apartment, is it better to skip the lap and have somebody else pick it up, you know, and expose the hallway so we can get to the seat of the fire quicker? You know, what do you think, Chief? What would you like to see? And if I called that play, are you cool with that? But I think as far as getting the group on board, and as you said, Ricky, you know, that, you know, they're not doing us any favors the way they're building firehouses. You know, I'm in a tent right now and I'll be in a new firehouse next year. And I'm struggling with that too. You know, our bunks are separate. Our bathrooms are combined, whatever that's about. You know, luckily we still have the kitchen table. You know, we can have, like you said, these honest conversations, but it's about the company, you know, it's about the family. You know, to me, it's the organization. It's the people in the street. It's the company. The last thing I am, I hope, is a shift leader, because I don't want to be that guy. And not that I won't have those conversations, but I think if it's explained like that, and then the mission for the company is that, again, we're going to be the best on the fire ground. We can't do that unless we know every intricacy about everything that we're dealing with. I'm on the engine company now, and I noticed that we're still carrying bottle jacks on the ladder truck, you know? And so the other day I'm like, it's the guys were, you know, on their second workout of the day. And I'm like, hey, what's the pull on those, or the distance on those bottle jacks, and what's the weight capacity? And it was literally, you know, 80% of a company of 10 guys. Not sure. Well, then, you know, I appreciate the physical fitness part of it. And we did that this morning for an hour. And now that we're not running calls, maybe you ought to go find out, because that's a piece of equipment on that ladder truck that you are so proud to ride because it bends in the middle, that maybe you should figure out, you know, every single tool on that truck and what its purpose is, how it operates, every intricacy about it. Because on the fire ground, as you know, or on the trap job with the incident scene or whatever, that's not the time to figure it out. And they took to that. I mean, I wasn't a jerk about it. I probably could have been more diplomatic, but they get it. Yep, he's right. Yep, I'm doing, you know, my 1,000th right arm, you know, curl when I don't even know what that bottle jack does. So they get it. And again, it wasn't rude. It was in passing. It was something that I would say to anybody in this group. And you know, the thick skin, sure, that helps. But I think, you know, all you need is a band, a few of them on the shift, and they'll drive the rest of the shift to perform.
All right. Well, Sammy, if we had to go over all the tools on your fire truck, it usually takes you about an hour to go down the side of it anyway, because those short little legs of yours. So, I mean, that's a big rig. So,
we got to keep moving the ladder.
The questions I initially asked, you know, starting with Chief Shaw, and then obviously Kraut always opens up another door for us. So, you pick which door you want to go through and go with it.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with the original question. Personally, I don't think they're tough conversations if they're normal conversations. If you're consistently addressing the good and bad and addressing problems, and, one of the guys told me, he said, hey, look, I like that this is a place where you can be a fireman. And I said, I think we're selling ourselves short there. It shouldn't be a place where you can be a fireman. It should be expected. It should be a place where you're expected to be a fireman, particularly when you're on that 24 hours. But at the end of the day, while they might be normal, you know, it's also going to be annoying. And hopefully Scott and I, when Scott does his webinar and I just sit there for moral support on the 27th, we'll actually get into not everything is leadership. There are people that you're going to be able to lead, and they're going to receive the negative message very quickly and embrace it and try to make those adjustments. And other people are going to perceive it as management, and that's okay. We can't lead everybody. There are people that we don't like. There are people that don't like us, and sometimes we just have to manage them. And when we address the deficiencies in a management way, that this is what we're going to do, this is why we're going to do it, we also have to expect that there's going to be a delayed awareness there. Some people will do it because they have to. Other people are going to be a little resistant to it immediately. But if you can make a good case and you have a logical reason for why you're deploying the way you are, they're going to go back and they're going to think about it, and they're going to come back and probably perform the next time, whether they admit it or not. But at the end of the day, hopefully, you know, I recently had this problem with one of my guys, and he was getting frustrated. And one of the other firefighters went to him and said, look, when he quits addressing issues with you, he's given up on you. And that really kind of helped for him to see it from that perspective, that I was still interested in trying to grow him.
All right, Roger.
Okay. Now that Scott and Sam has covered everything, I'm good. I don't have anything else left to add. I can echo several of those things. It becomes an easier conversation when it's or not as hard of a conversation when it's expected, when the expectation has been set, and then you can continually grow. You sit down and the humility is really instilled in people. Sometimes people just need to calm down a little bit to be able to swallow their pride a little bit, or their hostility, or their anger. Sometimes it might not be a conversation you can have immediately, but you need to circle back after you've gotten cleaned up or whatever the case may be. The closer you are with each other, the more involved you are, helps make it that person that you're really leaning on, depending on next to you. And I think with this group, we've all grown We've, I mean, Chief Riley's definitely seen my growth in 25 years, and he got to have some of those nice, fun conversations with me years ago, and hopefully I took some of those away and have learned from it. But it's if it wasn't the same conditions, or he wouldn't have had those conversations, it things definitely would have went more awry and the opposite way. And at the time, I didn't see the reason or whatnot, but over time and being able to sit down and learn from it really makes it better.
Oh, so I got through to you. I was still wondering. So
some of the time, the silent treatment too.
Sometimes it's very effective, but it doesn't go back to what Sammy said, is, you know, stop trying. So look, I wanted to ask this question. I briefly talked about it with Sammy yesterday. Is that I'm a little leery of the growth of YouTube training. So that one's starting to get me a little bit, is that, so Roger alluded to it. So, you know, whether we take a video either through a, you know, helmet cam, or, you know, we got a GoPro in the car, which, you know, is an excellent learning tool. I mean, I use that every call I go on. I have a GoPro in the car, which obviously does the audio and the video. So I'm able to go back and listen to the conversations that me and the command team are having inside the car about that particular fire. You know, the disagreements, and I don't mean disagreements in a bad way, but just, you know, hey, you know, let's do this. No, let's not do that. Let's get this company to do that, just to go back and listen to that stuff. So, but, you know, I think that we're definitely leaning on YouTube a lot more than we're leaning on, you know, the Chief Shaw, the Captain Kraut, Captain, you know, Hiddle, you know, Chief Steger, you know, leaning on those people to get us through these things, you know, rather than going on using their experience, using their hands-on ability to do things. Hey, I'll just go watch a YouTube video and get it done, rather than have it to listen to this guy. So Sammy, I'm going to let you lead that one off, since you and I had this discussion yesterday. So
I think social media can be outstanding for looking at what we might do. The problem is I wouldn't argue some of the social media video that a technique they used worked for that particular setup or in their particular deployment model with their strategic objectives. But those three things are what we have to ask ourselves before we adopt somebody else's tactic. Do we have the resources? Do we have the skills? Do we have the training? Does our deployment model support it? And too often we see something and we try to adopt it without asking those questions, including how did the department even come to that tactic? Was it a bad fire they had? How did they learn that? And why did they employ it? Because it might not line up with what we do. And the other thing is, you've got these guys out there that are putting up YouTube videos because they're trying to sell you classes. They just want to come out and teach. It's about money for them. And that's a real problem. So you have to also ask yourself, why are they sharing this with me? Because they want to make me better. They want to truly help me, because it really is a solid tactic that they think could be beneficial to my department. Or are they just trying to sell classes and make money so they can make their house payment? I think that's the thing that annoys me the most. And so with that said, before you adopt something that you've seen on YouTube, you've got to go out and you've got to practice it in multiple situations. And I'll just give an example that I typically do is we were looking at a hose load. We had a shotgun flat on the third floor with a very short landing in our first do. And we were looking at a hose load. And so what we did is we went out and we tried this hose load. But before we actually said, okay, if we have a top floor fire here, what we had to do was take the current hose load we had and makes a little bit of changes to it before we went up on the landing. So before we adopted it, we tried it 24 more times and we messed it up in every way we could possibly think of to see if we mess it up or we load it wrong on our shoulders, would we be able to overcome it in zero visibility? And so I guess what I'm saying is, before you adopt anything, you have to test it. It has to be street proven. Just because it worked once for them in a YouTube video doesn't mean it's going to work. I'll show you a video that we use real quick. What we were doing is we were making fun of gimmick hose loads. So we built this cherry bomb, 100 feet in 10 seconds. And we were really tempted to put it on social media to see how many people would adopt it. And we were only going to do it once so we could say that it works 100% of the time.
Sammy, your head works in so many different ways than everybody else's that it's unbelievable.
Hey, Sammy, can you send me that? I want to adopt it tomorrow.
We thought it would be a good attic load. If you cut a hole in the roof and you drop it down, just explodes and goes crazy if you put enough pressure on it.
You better watch it. There's probably going to be an Instagram in the next hour or so.
Yeah, from never mind.
Keyshaw, look like you had something. I mean, other than laughing at Sammy, I mean, which is what most of us do. So
I couldn't unmute until I got the last out of me. That was freaking great. You mentioned YouTube training. I'm a fan of YouTube videos. I love watching them. I just hate scrolling down and reading the comments. It just tweaks me every time. You know what I'm talking about. I never look at the comments first. If I see a video, I always watch the video first. I see what I think about it. You know, what can I take from it? Goods, bads, you know, just trying to get a perspective of it. But it seems like every time I go down to the comments, it's just a absolute crap show. And you know, it's, you know, this guy did this, this guy did that. And then the fight start. I get very frustrated when I see that. Going back a little bit, let me back up. So YouTube training, video training, is there a place for it? Yeah. I mean, I love looking to see what our brothers and sisters out there across the country or across the world are doing. I think it's phenomenal. In terms of training, in the same view as I had with online training, there's a place for it, but not as the sole backbone of a program. You have to have, as long as it supplements a good hands-on training program, then yes, YouTube videos, online training, it has a place. Target Solutions, whatever online platform you're using, wonderful. But it can't be the sole source of training for any topic, especially firefighting. But it does have its place. And I know there's a lot of people out there that are hosting a lot of these videos that I love watching. Some are very positive in nature, and some, thank God, delete some of those negative comments so you can look at it from a mostly positive perspective. But yeah, like I said, YouTube is in particular, just the responses really just tweak me a lot. You know, just it just bothers me a little bit. But that being said, I definitely like to see what our brothers and sisters are doing out there. I like to compare tactics. I try to make it a topic of conversation as opposed to a battleground, you know? And there's a lot more. I've always been a video guy. I've always had that camera, and I've always been a very huge proponent of that training from the videos, which you can learn from it. And I think at my stations before I came into training, because I did it in a positive way, and it was funny because every time my A shift captain would relieve me in the morning when I was getting off shift and we had a fire, I'd always have it on the screen playing so we can come in and go, you had another one. And we'd all learn from it. It was a very positive thing in nature. So I think that Sam alluded to this earlier about culture and setting the tone and setting that clear communication that, you know, making it positive from the get-go, or at least trying to as best you can, instead of being that nitpicking person is important. But yeah, so that's my thoughts on the YouTube thing. I think there's some great ones out there, but it just, I don't like that negativity that comes with it, that battleground that we, and it's ourselves that are doing it. You see it all the time. I just wish they can not do that as much, let's just say.
You know, they should, you know, you got to look at who's sending it or posting it, because, you know, you can turn off all comments, you know, so they must be striving for some feedback, because I would never post a video and allow somebody to comment on it. That, like you said, it gets counterproductive. And once again, it's what Sammy said, is that, hey, I don't know what's going on in Oakland, California. I mean, obviously they put out some great videos, and some of those California departments, San Jose and all those. But once again, that doesn't fit, like Sammy said, our deployment model, our streets, our response area, our geographic area, our buildings. You know, so it's kind of hard for you to comment on something that you don't know nothing about, how that organization operates. So, I mean, Roger, I'll go down to you, because, I mean, obviously, you know, 8x10 puts out a ton of videos. I don't think they allow comments. I think that'd probably be a bad thing. But what do you use all this video footage for?
I'm pretty sure most of the time the comments are turned on. They're they're filtered pretty well, or I shouldn't say filtered, but they're watched and to make sure there's no back and forth bickering. It's not a troll pool. Somebody has something constructive to say or whatnot, comments like that stay. But if people start going back and forth or whatnot, it's not that that gets usually shut down and blocked. But a lot of the videos, there's a ton more videos that just get used internally amongst the individual members or crews or shifts, just whether it be to look at how something worked, talk about construction, fire behavior, or whatever, just deployment, whether it be engine-wise, truck-wise, and just to go back and watch what how it happened or whatever went down so we can get back to, we can improve on ourselves. That's what that company did or whatnot, or it's used almost always geared towards ourselves, self-critique and self-gain.
Scott Kraut, you want to get your thoughts in on that one?
I think everything's pretty much been said. I mean, I agree with Sammy and Chief Shaw. I mean, you got to get your hands on it. What works for me might not work for you. And I think Roger hit the nail on the head there. I mean, I think internally it makes good sense because you're operating in the same environment under the same SOGs, SOPs. There's no deviance in that. And you know, that's decent. I mean, I personally don't look at YouTube videos. I just, you know, just like everything else, I feel like it's either an ask for some sort of response. It's, you know, look at me. However, when it's done internally, I think is a responsible means of training. I mean, it's just another way to get the training out there. It's important. It's as important as a written document, but nothing beats putting your hands on it. And, you know, and obviously to further that, nothing beats putting your hands on it at 3 o'clock in the morning when it's snowing outside and you're half asleep. And, you know, that cool bundle didn't work out so well because you hadn't done it 24 times before you instituted it. So I think that's the takeaway is, you know, it's good for information. It's good to look and, like, as you said, Ricky, look at some of these places that have real good videos and maybe critique their fire, you know, Monday morning quarterback it just, you know, based on your own SOGs and policies and hose loads and everything else. And, but yeah, I don't get too wrapped around the axle with the, you know, here's how you should do it, or this is the best load, or, you know, the best search technique. I mean, it's until you put it on the apparatus bay floor, or, you know, in the acquired structure or the training room, it's just that. It's just somebody's opinion.
All right, so we're getting kind of close here. Sammy, did you? I'm going to kind of go around here and see if we had any closing thoughts, and then I'll finish it up for us. So, did you want to start with some closing thoughts here? Or?
Not really. I mean, I think at the end of the day, it really does come down to if you care, then nothing. Nothing is perfect, and being honest with yourself doesn't mean that you're a bad firefighter. It just means that you want to be a better firefighter, and that's the way we have to look at it, so our feelings aren't hurt. My right-hand guy asked me after a job the other day, he said, have you ever gone to a fire you were completely happy with? And I said, no, I haven't, and I don't expect to. I do look forward to retiring, though. When I retire, then I will have been the perfect firefighter because I'll never have a chance to prove myself otherwise.
Oh, Sammy. So, right, good. Scott, I'll let you give that closing thought. I have something I want to throw out here, but go ahead.
Roger Scott.
Scott Kraut. Sorry.
No, I think the takeaway, I mean, it's a great topic, you know, but I think the overall takeaway is, you know, the biggest conversation that maybe we need to have on the next hump day is, and I have to do a little research, but this is not a problem if you can have those conversations. As Sammy said, the good, the bad, the, you know, the praise, the discipline, whatever that looks like. But that's at the end of the day, that's it, man. If the guys and girls care about what they're doing, the mission, your mission as a company officer or a shift leader or a battalion chief, as long as your mission is clear and at the end of that, the beginning of that mission is the citizens that you serve, followed by your crew. I don't see how you can screw it up. And again, maybe I'm looking through rose colored glasses. Maybe I've been lucky with, you know, my shifts and the ones I've been supervised, the ones that I have supervised. But yeah, it seems to me that if the mission is clear, and it's the same mission that we all have, the mission is not any different here than it is in Wichita or Florida, then the subordinate or the, you know, the thorn in your side, they can't argue with that. Bottom line, we're here to do a job. We're here to be proficient at it. And yeah, as Sammy said, I haven't been to a perfect fire yet. I haven't been to a perfect incident yet. There's always something to take away. And, you know, a lot of people say it's pretty cliche, but I think when you stop making yourself better, stop making your crew better, stop learning, it's time to go.
Roger.
Yeah. What they said.
Okay.
Now just try to figure out how you need to go about detaching in order to view yourself in that other light in order for growth. So stay humble.
Chief Shaw.
I know that you guys probably get reached out to after these hump day hangouts like I do. In the last month, I've had, I think, three people reach out to me just on various topics that have been talked about through the years or through the last few months, that is. And I'm glad because people are watching this and are taking a lot from the conversations we're having. Firehouse is a family, and families have tough conversations, whether it's after a fire, from a YouTube video, or at the firehouse table. And we should be having more of those conversations, and it should be expected to have more of those conversations. So this has been a phenomenal conversation, guys.
All right. The thing that I wanted, you know, after listening to Sammy's and after a couple of fires that I've been either involved with or consulted with afterwards, is stop talking about it. You know, hey, let's talk about it. Let's find out what our problems were, what everything we need to address, and then just quit belaboring the point, man. Just we got to talk about it, do something about it, and then move on. Just this constant, you know, we recently rehashed a fire for an entire week. I literally lost probably 6 hours of the week talking about one fire. And I'm like, all right, everybody's got an opinion. Let's do something about it. Let's stop talking about it. Let's do something about it, whatever we're going to do. And then let's move on. You know, we got another fire to go to. There's going to be another fire. So, you know, have the conversations, but have the conversations and actually do something about it. So for like when Sammy was talking about his couple incidents that sparked some of this conversation was that, hey, yeah, you know, we got a problem. We got to do something about it. One, we're going to have a conversation about it. Then we're going to do some kind of hands-on portion of it so we all kind of understand it. And then, hey, let's move on to the next one. Just like Scott Kraut was talking about the bottle jack, I'm sure there's something else on that ladder truck that's oddball that somebody doesn't know about. You know, we just got to move on to the next piece. But, you know, God, just stop talking about it so much. You know, granted, the conversation is good, and that's what we want. That's how we started this whole blog. But don't belabor it for a week at a time. You know, I mean, God, imagine if you were the guy that was the receiver of this, how terrible that would be, you know, just to have to live a whole week, you know, these people talking about this particular fire. So, but hey, I just wanted to thank all of you for being on, man. It was great. Scott Kraut, thanks for filling in. Chief Heller, I was sick today. I appreciate you taking your time out. And Sammy, always thank you for your great ideas. Chief Shaw, always an interesting perspective. We love it. Just be sure, you know, as we say goodbye to Fire Engineering and the Clarion Group, October 27th at 7:30 p.m., Scott Kraut and Sammy Hill are going to be doing a podcast for us with Fire Engineering and Traditions Training on the company officer. I'm really interested to hear this. Two good company officers, one that I've worked with. Hey, you too. one that I've worked with and got to mentor with Scott Kraut, and just absolutely love what he's done with his career. And then Sammy, and then we'll just kind of go from there. So it'll be interesting to see. So please tune in, as we love that you tuned in to Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio, or excuse me, Hump Day Hangout. My apologies. And we hope to see you all very soon. Thank you, everybody, for being on the show. And thank you to Clarion.